Hello and welcome to Canine Binge Quake, a show about the Doctor Who spinoff that Time Forgot, where we forgot to tell our guests to watch the rest of it. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Tom.
And I'm Evan.
So, welcome to the show, Evan. Can you introduce yourself for us?
Who am I? I'm actually asking myself, how do I introduce myself other than just friend of Tom and Kevin? Hi, I'm Evan, and I am a Doctor Who fan who tweets and blogs about Doctor Who and sometimes maps as well.
All right, we are here today discussing K-9 Episode 3, The Corvin. So, what did you guys think of this episode?
I will refer to one of my notes as I made watching it was, this is a slightly naff Scooby-Doo.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty accurate to the vibe. Actually, doubling back slightly before we get into your impressions of the episode. Did you have any preconceptions? Did you have any idea about what the show is going to be like before you agreed to this madness of appearing on this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, madness is definitely the word I would use to describe it. All I really knew about it was that it existed. It was made in Australia, but I had not seen any of it. I didn't really know what it was going to be like. I guess in my head, I just imagined it would be something like the Sarah Jane Adventures, but that was just, you know, based on it being a Doctor Who spin-off targeted at a younger audience. So pretty much that, really.
Bizarrely, something we talked about in the last one with Max, it supposedly aimed at an older audience than Sarah Jane, which is hard to believe. Oh. I mean, yeah, exactly. Oh. I mean, yeah.
That is the appropriate disgusted and shocked reaction, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so episode 3, The Corvin, this is kind of part 3 of 3 in the sense that the opening three sort of episodes kind of link up in some ways. But yeah, so Evan, obviously you came in completely blind. You watched this without having any context of what's going on in the first
two. This is all a complete revelation to me, because yeah, I've not seen the first two episodes. So literally my first impression was the beginning of this episode.
And you've not even listened to our first episode, have you?
No, the podcast? No.
Yeah, so absolutely total fresh start. So what did you think then? First impressions, you say you think it was like Scooby-Doo.
Yes, except it was not as witty and a bit more metallic. So
which sums up K-9 versus Scooby himself.
Yes. And you know, I'm glad you've given me that context about how it's kind of the opening of a trilogy, because there's no sense of that. It kind of, you're watching it in isolation and you just assume it's going to be self-contained. I mean, you actually, nope, I have no idea what's going on. Like most of my initial impression was like, are we in London? Is it the future? K-9 flies now. who are these people? And it's just, yeah.
To be fair, the show hasn't really answered some of those questions.
Oh, right. Okay, good. It's not just me.
Yeah, this show is not very good at communicating and setting things up necessarily. Yeah.
There are two very brief, like, establishing shots. And I'm like, I'm assuming this is London, but it's not. It wasn't iconic enough for me to immediately recognize London. And I have been to London a fair few times, so I was like, "Oh, no. is it an Australian
city?" It's supposed
city?
To be a futuristic London, and that's also really hard to pick up from those establishing shots, where it just looks like it could be pretty much any city from those shots. And I'm pretty sure it's the same shot they've used in previous episodes too.
I think so.
Not a good point.
Like even on the streets and when they're moving about, you don't think, "Oh, this is obviously London." In the way, if you watch something like Rose, when it establishes, you know, the world and the characters, you go, oh, this is London. This is someone who goes about in their, you know, their daily life in London. But this, it was just like, who is this? Who are these people? Why should I care? It kind of, yeah, it very much assumes you know who these people are and what's going on as an initial impression.
Yeah, there's some... Even the kind of modern series, kind of Cardiff standing in for London, it's just miles more convincing, isn't it? Than whatever's going on here in Brisbane.
Yeah, and as such, I barely know the characters despite watching the episode, and it's like I've got K-9, and there's a prof, and there are some kids. I don't even remember what their names are based on one viewing. So you're probably going to have to guide me through who they are and how they relate to each other.
Why don't we break that down to start with? So what do you remember of the kids? Who do you think these people are?
Well, oh God, this is just a pop quiz now. there was
we're here to torture you. Character,
yeah. This is hell. There's this boy, and he's some sort of fugitive, but he's not running away from Jadoon, so it's a less interesting fugitive. I think he calls himself a dissident. I do remember that now, actually. And I was like, oh, just call yourself a fugitive or something. But I don't know why he's on the run or running away. And then there was this girl who came into the woods to help him. And somehow she knew he was there and brought some food, I think. And yep. And then there was this prof, and he has another kid who's kind of like his assistant. And the prof is like the clever guy. And I kind of guessed he would be the person to like maybe repair or, you know, maintain K9. But there was nothing in the episode that suggested they'd met before. So I couldn't tell if that was a good guess or not. and then the prof, like if we're talking sort of first out, the prof gets kidnapped by this alien, which I didn't know it was a Corvin. It takes about half the episode for them to establish this is a Corvin. So like in my notes, I just referred to him as Ghostbuster Gremlin. that's what he looked like, really, if you haven't seen it. He was a man dressed as a Ghostbuster, but with a gremlin head. I mean, he even had some sort of like tube thing that he carried, which wasn't like his ghostbusting thing, but it was something to absorb.
Welcome to
things.
The creative costume design of this show. The previous episode, there was an alien that was literally just a drag queen, so this is an upgrade.
Yes. We'll get on. I've got an interesting fact or two about the alien of this episode, so we'll get on to that a bit later. But in terms of the setup that you've kind of mentioned of how it begins, I mean, even if you've watched the first two, this it feels to me like there's a weird disconnect. I don't know if you agree, Kevin, of kind of Starkey is suddenly homeless here. Starkey is the dissident.
Starkey, brilliant. I've learned a character's name now.
Yeah, Starkey is the dissident.
So, one of the major arcs of this episode is Starkey finding a place he can call home with the professor and Darius, who's the blonde Draco Malfoy ripoff. And
yes,
I gotta say the resolution to that, to skip ahead, in which he moves in with the professor and all that, I was kind of left wondering why that hadn't already happened, because as a matter of fact, they have met already. They've broken a bunch of aliens out of jail together, and it's like you do all that and then you just tell them, go live in the forest, eat baked beans, we won't give you a way to cook them.
I did not understand this at all. Yeah, I mean, like, I get him being fugitive-y and all that based on what we've seen before. The last thing at the end of episode two, he was running away from some cops and things, and he's kind of an activist and all this. But why is the fact of him being homeless not a pressing matter in the first two episodes at all? It's just forgotten
also,
about.
Also, I just have to ask, where are those woods?
Hyde Park thinking, or something.
In the middle of future London, why are there woods?
Yeah, no, that's a valid point.
I mean, actually, you know what? I was watching this, and I've only watched this episode in isolation. And at first, I was thinking, okay, why is this person on the run and such? And are we going to find that out? But actually, you've picked up on the more pressing question: is why are there trees in London? And I think that is the problem: was that I got more distracted by the weird details in the story rather than the actual sort of big thematic questions that you might sort of be looking at in terms of like who are these characters, what's their motivation, and what's going on in the world, kind of thing.
So, would you like us to answer that for you?
I would love to. I've been in the dark for however long this recording's been so far, and indeed, like, the week since I've watched it, so fill me in.
So we have Starkey, who's the main character and is on the run in this episode. He's sort of like a political dissident who goes by the hacker name Stark Reality. Apparently he's a big deal. We've not seen him do anything of substance to back that up, but the cops all want him. He's got soul bonded to K9 as his master when K9
a little bit of soul bonded.
A little bit of a soul loop bond from Sarah Jane kind of thing, we think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Soul bonded is a fascinating word.
That's not the word they use. That's the word I use.
Oh, right. Okay. It's probably worse than that then.
He just randomly decided this annoying little kid is his master. Meanwhile, there's Georgie, who is the hyper-competent female lead, who
who everyone ignores.
Starkey and Darius want to
really
bone.
Cares about her.
Yeah, it's weird. The show seems to be not remotely recognizing that she's by far the most interesting, but it keeps sidelining her in strange ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, frustrating.
Yes, and yeah, particularly because there's a bit with her mother as well in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether her mother has been introduced before now, but at least those two very brief scenes, one where, you know, she says goodbye to her mother and her mother goes to work. And then we get the other scene with her mother later on where she's some sort of, you know, like space cop. I don't know, like space MI5, like future kind of thing. And you go, oh, okay. So she could be like an interesting conflict there because she's friends with this.
Yes, that's kind of by far the most interesting part of the show we've gotten so far. Her mom is basically the fascist regime.
Ah, okay. That's not as pleasant.
but what is really odd, I totally agree that this should be, well, this is quite compelling, or it kind of should be, you know, one of the main things they're focusing on. But it's such an odd, again, disconnect from the previous episode, because, again, obviously Evan won't know this, but the previous episode ended, or one of the kind of big twists at the end of the previous episode was that this person working for the department, working for the kind of evil government agency, who we'd already seen in episode one, we didn't know that that was Georgie's mum yet. But then the twist at the end of episode two was, oh my goodness, it is Georgie's mum, you know, but dun dun dun. But then there's not really any fallout from it at all in this, is there?
No.
Would you say? Yeah, it's very odd to just sort of leave that kind of dangling. But I mean, even just the scenes where, you know, Mum is kind of supervising, as she puts it, supervising the clothes she buys and stuff. It's this thing, again, that we've talked about in the first couple of episodes, that she feels by far the most real of the characters because she has a kind of proper life, you know, and other characters that she relates to and all this. It just feels like she's the one who's most in tune with the sort of RTD-esque approach to grounding characters in their environment.
Shall we move on to the other two then?
Yeah, go on then.
What did you make of the professor? Did you pick up on his one major character trait?
He's looking for his family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got it right. I understood something.
It was very subtle.
They make it very subtle, yes.
It was very heavy-handed. Incredibly heavy-handed. It was basically his own, like, I'm a clever person and I'm looking for my family.
Yeah,
and those two points were kind of crowbarred at every opportunity that we got something to learn about him. Even to the point where I'm kind of
you can write his dialogue for the previous two episodes.
But I was going to say, I'm jumping slightly ahead in the plot, but there is a bit where, you know, to do with the Corvin and how they kind of sort of extract their minds and their memories. And we see like a sort of, I think it's meant to be a flashback to his family and happier times, but it just looks like a really, really bright photo shoot, really.
my note was, this is a perfume commercial.
Can I be honest about something here? I found that scarier than the actual alien. There was just so much teeth.
There was so much teeth. It was so bright. It was so happy. It was so happy, it was unnerving.
Pure cheese.
Kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Scary cheese. Yes.
Which I guess brings us to our one other character who I think pretty much earns the trait of being the other one, Darius, the blonde. What you make of him?
He didn't really leave much of an impression on me. He's there, and he's there to kind of, you know, go and find the prof. And then, you know, he's kind of the bullish character almost, kind of in terms of, oh yeah, we're going to go save the prof. And they go, what's your plan? And he's like, save the prof. You go, okay, great plan.
Yeah.
And so
there is a bit.
Go on.
I was just going to say there is a little bit in this episode that a little bit more than in the previous two sort of tries to tell us a bit about his, I guess, backstory. That he's fallen out with his parents or something like that, or
okay,
his parents have split up or something like that. And so he sees the professor as his father figure. But that's kind of all we get. It's quite thin.
But you add, again, that's something I didn't know, and that kind of makes that rationalizes the character a bit more, but that's not asserted in any way throughout the episode. So you're just
he feels like the afterthought character in the ensemble. Basically, when we first met him in the first episode, he was just sort of tagging along with the professor. I guess you could call him the professor's companion if you really wanted to use that plot logic, but
he seemed like a sort of young assistant or apprentice to him. Yeah,
that is pretty much the team. Although I suppose we probably should mention K-9. He's also in it.
Really? K-9? Yes, in a TV show?
Did you enjoy K-9 in this?
I had so many questions about K-9 because my entire understanding of K-9 as a character was flipped on its head in this episode. It was absolutely baffling. In fact, one of the first things I wrote down was, oh, wow, K-9 flies now. Here comes that boy. Because my introduction is just that shot where he's running away from the police and K-9 is just flying. And you just, from a production perspective, you imagine that, you know, all of the memories that Bob Baker might have had about how K-9 was a very clunky prop and unreliable prop when they filmed, you know, Doctor Who back in the 70s. And they're like, yeah, well, now we'll just make him CGI's pain in the butt instead. So, you know, he half of his time on screen is probably just CGI floating somewhere in the screen. And everyone goes, yeah, K-9. And then K-9 tells them everything they need to know. And then they go on adventures.
Except for when it'll solve the plot too quickly. So then when that happens, he just gets a bit cold and shuts down.
Yes.
And a bit high.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You've got to stop that power creep happening in the third episode of a 26-episode run. Because otherwise, K-9 would have solved all the problems by now.
Well, I feel like this is probably going to become an increasing thing they have to do every week. Because this already happened in the first two episodes. So the first episode, he gets blown up. And has to kind of re-put himself together. And then the second one, he's stuck in a bin? He's just like zapped by camera thing. And then he falls into a bin, and he's just stuck in a bin for most of episode two. So it's bizarre that, like, he's supposed to be the main attraction, but half the time he's just not doing anything.
Well, problem this is hit on is K-9's not an interesting character.
Right.
There's nothing you can build a show about him in. So all the other characters nominally have things to do, whereas K-9 is literally a plot device. And honestly, he's kind of annoying me right now.
Yeah, you know, I can understand that because, you know, again, one of the things... Go on, yeah.
No, you go on, Evan. You go on.
Oh, right. Well, I was just going to say K-9 does... He feels like the Doctor Who kind of figure that he does a lot of the exposition. Like, all the kids asking questions and he gives answers, and then that's basically K-9's function in the plot, in that he has all of the utility in terms of the knowledge and, you know, and the laser gun in his nose to just solve all the problems kind of thing.
He's that, but he's also the one other note that they hit is he repeatedly doesn't understand jokes. But that's getting quite annoying. I agree with Kevin that they keep hitting the same thing of... K-9 doesn't understand this.
I am so tired of K-9 comic relief.
Good thing you're not doing a 26-episode podcast series on this, Kevin.
I know. Well, I'm glad he's only in this episode, and then we'll never have to deal with him again, right?
Yeah. The K-9 title is just a front for an actual proper show, and then we just get him out of the way in three episodes. And,
And then we just get to watch engrossing drama about the Corvin.
Yes.
There was one bit that felt like it almost reached the dizzying heights of a minor beat in one of the less good Sarah Jane episodes, which is, I don't know if you remember the Sarah Jane episode, The Gift, which mostly sucks. But there's a bit in that where I think Clyde is trying to use K-9 to cheat on a test at school, which is quite fun. And
the only good part of that episode.
Exactly. And in this, I thought the thing of trying to Starkey trying to use K-9 to speed cook things had potential to be a similar kind of amusing gag. But basically he just zaps baked beans and that's kind of it.
And do you know, my favourite detail was the fart noise that the canned baked beans made, which, you know, just, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also,
they're trying so hard to be quirky that it just is really grating.
Yeah. It makes the Slitheen look very sophisticated.
But also, I did notice, I was like, this is a setup for something later on, and I was right, which I was, I was pleased that, you know, there were some storytelling basics that I followed.
and that the episode, you know, to its credit, followed as well. That the baked beans thing was a sort of MacGuffin for how he zaps the Corvin at the end.
Exactly. Things that you heat get hot. That's what I learned.
That sort of things that you heat get hot. This plot logic is honestly on the level of 60s Batman. Right down to the set design.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say is before we get onto the Corvin itself, there is one other figure that I suppose we should mention, which is that halfway through, or is it early on? I can't remember. This sort of random info dump pops up when this sort of I guess, is it like a hologram or a kind of hologram message or something from this guy who's like a special operations commando from the future, just pops up and says, oh, you know, Earth in the 27th century is terrible, and something about the Corvin are trying to cool Earth down, which is bad, which seems like a weird message at the time of global warming. But anyway.
Wasn't an issue in 2009. It's suddenly just come on the agenda.
They didn't know about that then, yeah. So yeah, that's a kind of weird info dump, which again feels a bit unnecessary when you've got K-9 there. He could probably
And actually, my note for that was, okay, plot is basically Terminator.
That is a good point.
I'm not going to lie, I did kind of like that beat, though. It was just, it feels like slowly the show's ramping up to do some sort of plot about time travel interference between the professor's ongoing plot arc, because all he cares about is his lost family, is getting this time portal machine to work again to find his family. And meanwhile, we have people coming back in the future saying we need to change this. And I don't know, I feel like you get something pleasantly convoluted out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, as far as I know, I mean, well, this is slightly spoilery territory, but I think the Corvin are a recurring threat, because
that was my understanding of the show,
because
yeah.
I think this isn't a big spoiler, but I think there are several episodes later on that are called something of the Corvin. I think that's some of the episode titles.
Yes, that rings a bell.
So I think that will be a sort of arc, so that's, you know, maybe show some promise possibly.
I was just going to say, I was going to make a comment, and I was like, oh, I wonder if we've seen the last of the Corvin again. I wouldn't know, because I'm not watching the other 25 episodes, so I just leave that hanging, and then you've
seen the last of the Corvin.
Yes. Which is why you are the real winner here. So yeah,
they aren't very good, are they?
Well, yeah, they're not. I do think they're probably better than the aliens from the first couple of episodes, but that's a very low bar. I prefer them to the Jixon, who are these weird turtle alien things. Evan won't know what I'm talking about, but yeah, I think the makeup looks a
little better.
They're
basically a very large piece of fiberglass that vomits on people.
Yeah, but the Corvin, yeah, it's a bit froggy, isn't it? Sort of green thing with sort of kind of they're sort of like chin tusks or something, and they don't talk, which I feel is a bit kind of point, well, I don't know, it just doesn't really feel like there's any character potential there. Maybe later ones can talk, I don't know.
This is truly
I would also say I would also say, given, I mean, this episode is clearly setting up to establish a pretty big monster. It's the first one we've had with a baddie in the title. It's going out to be big, you know,
what,
establishing,
like saying
things.
This is important.
Guy is directed about as blandly as it's humanly possible to do. There is no menace in anything the camera does with him.
It's,
you know, bright lighting, full-on camera shot, just showing you how
they go to an abandoned ice works for the sort of showdown, which I thought was an okay kind of setting, and the sort of, you know, this sort of atmospheric liquid ice, greeny kind of color. Also, it looked a little better than some of the stuff from the first two episodes, but yeah, basically, you know.
I mean, it had an atmosphere, but then part of that is Kevin's noted, like the Batman 60s vibe, because I noted that one bit there was a sign in the background that said ice in giant capital letters, as if I didn't know this place was cold.
just in case.
Just in case I was confused. and then K-9 has a little nap.
Sophisticated teen audiences.
He has a little nap in the ice because we need some danger before the climax that he's not got enough battery. And then even when you get to the climax, I wrote this down because it went, okay, Tin Mutt, it's zapping time. And my brain just went, it's Morbin time.
The other thing,
it's Corvin time.
The other thing the Corvin apparently seem to do is they absorb information from your brain, this process called leeching, and it leaves you an empty husk. So that seems to be sort of their main or immediate threat, doesn't it? But did you notice that sometimes when they were doing that, they seem to have missed out the leeching effect? So there's a couple of shots where they're sort of, you know, he's zapping with his hand, I think it's Starkey and the professor, isn't it? But there's a couple of other shots where he's doing it and they're groaning in pain, but there is no light or whatever. They just missed it.
I must have missed that, but I did think it was odd that it looked very stop-start. Like, there wasn't, like they'd just given up and run out of time on some of the shots.
Oh, man. Okay, so my fun fact about the Corvin, and this really is quite wild, I'm sure, you know, most Who fans, certainly anyone who's as far down the rabbit hole listening to this, will know about the Cushing films from the 1960s. And there was an attempt by a fan group or a bunch of fans in the 1980s to make a third Cushing film, you know, without Cushing, called Mission of Doom. And one of the people involved in that was Paul Tamms, who is basically sort of created the K-9 show with Bob Baker. And I think he would have played the Doctor. And the Corvin were going to be the aliens in that, the frog alien villains in that. Whoa. And then he reuses them for this, which is just bizarre to me. But
no idea is wasted.
So they are literally an 80s.
Oh my God, that makes so much sense. There's a tendency in like spin-off Wilderness Years Doctor Who where every writer coming in has their big alien idea where they're going to keep shoehorning them in. They're going to make a big thing about it. They created this intense society they're so proud of. And every time it's super uninteresting. Like, I don't know, the Galliarian big finish from Simon Forward, that kind of thing. But
yeah, no one else uses them
today. Because K-9 has that weird status of being the one that makes it on screen, of course we get...
all the other sort of B and C
passion project terrible alien. It's an entire mythos on a TV show. Dear God, it's terrible.
Yeah, so that's where they're from anyway. Unexpected connection to Cushing.
The more you know.
Yeah. Just trying to think, do we have any other major beats, points, things about this episode we sort of want to cover or discuss? There's a detail about how the Professor Griffin is, what's the word? Is it agoraphobic when you're afraid of open spaces?
Agoraphobic,
yeah, you don't want to go outside. Okay. Yeah,
I've just learned his second name is Griffin. That's another new piece of information. He was just the prof to me the entire way through.
I mean, they do literally call him that, don't they? The prof, quite a lot. So yeah, fair enough. He's afraid of going outside. Which, I mean, okay, fair enough. That could be interesting, but it doesn't seem.
Oh,
I don't know.
So that's why the kids were so concerned that he like, oh, he's gone missing, and he's like, well, why would he go outside? That makes sense now.
True. Yes, devoid of that beat, it's very odd.
It's very odd why the kids were like, he's never gone out before, and I thought, how does he do the shopping? How does he get his parts for invention? Like, he never goes outside. It's like,
I think the idea is Darius is for stuff, but I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, right. So he's like his manservant.
Oh, gosh.
I think we should have a few questions about the professor having a little blonde twink as his manservant. Anyway.
Yes, definitely. Just,
There was one line, actually, I wanted to draw attention to where... They say someone says to K-9 like good boy or something, and K-9 insists that he isn't a boy, which was very Janet from The Good Place.
That,
if you've
that is
that.
True, yeah.
Says something like, "I'm a cybernetic construction with quantum consciousness."
He like, Yeah, there's a couple of other bits in I think the first episode where he's told, you know, good dog or something similar, and he
also he's called an alien life form. I remember at the beginning of the episode, so I was like, this is what I meant.
That has been an ongoing thing. Yes,
I was like,
they've been referring to canine as a life form. Yeah, strange.
I just feel like
there's a few beats where it feels like the canine is kind of not the canine that you know, he's not written, the dialogue isn't quite right. There's a bit where he says something like, I sense the police approaching, and it's like, that's just not canine would say, you know, I don't know, constabulary units detected or something. Do you know what I mean? He wouldn't say, I sense the police approaching. Like, it just isn't a canine line somehow.
Has it been established before this episode that this version of canine is a continuation of an existing version of canine from Doctor Who, or is he an entirely separate unit of canine?
That's Pandora's box, right?
Yeah. Okay, right.
That gets into somebody else. No, well, we might discuss this in more depth at some point in one of the episodes, but I think the short answer is he is meant to be a continuation. Yes.
Okay.
But in a slightly confused way.
The first episode does have the original canine prop turn up, and when it self-destructs and soul bonds and all that nonsense,
okay,
we get a regeneration between designs.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically Time and the Ronnie, but with canine.
That sounds like my kind of show, actually. What did I just watch?
Leave the cat. It's the dog I want. I'm so sorry. Yes, and the one line I do like is, he says, I shall attempt to kick surveillance posterior wherever possible from now on. I did quite like that.
Labored the first time, and it gets more labored on every repeat.
Yes. Oh, gosh. It's ridiculous, but...
Yeah. I mean, it's like, on the one hand, I love that Doctor Who's forgotten spinoff is a sort of rah-rah the police... Oh, I will censor that. Rah-rah, screw the police thing, but... It's bad.
Yeah, the idea of it does quite... Yeah, it is quite compelling in that sense, but just the execution is very lacking. Yeah. So, Evan, you were saying earlier that you are not going to watch the other 25 episodes.
I might do now. I don't know.
Oh.
This might have changed my mind.
Have we converted you?
I'm not sure so much as converted, but more brainwashed into enjoying this.
Good.
But this was, I mean, I was up for this, but like once I agreed to do it and then thought about it some more, I thought, actually, this is just going to be some weird, horrible new form of torture. And
yes,
I think I've been proven right. Yeah. But I might, you know, Stockholm Syndrome, I might just watch the rest of the episodes and enjoy the podcast series along with it as well.
Good. That's what we like to hear.
I have a couple of points I did want to address about the ending, which are interesting, because I thought they were worth noting. One was right at the end of the story when K-9 and Dissident Boy, I don't even remember his name, and you've told me multiple times throughout this, but I'm still going to call him Dissident Boy.
Starkey,
Starkey. And the Prof says to them, oh, we could do with some company. And my brain just goes, do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. What a concept.
Canine so there was... and company? My God.
I know. That's exactly what I was thinking. And interesting about Kevin's language just a moment ago, because I forgot to ask you that, but I did have one more closing remark, was at the very end of the episode, K-Knight says, good night, Master. But when I was watching this, I had the automated subtitles on, like auto-generated subtitles on YouTube, and it said, good night, Bastard.
Oh my God. That would improve the show immeasurably if it was a sweary K-9.
Oh, my new favorite piece of K-9 dialogue, and they didn't even write it.
So that I was, you know, as the credits rolled, I was laughing, frankly. Experience.
Job well done. Yes.
Thanks for joining us today. Evan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter if it's still operating. but that's very much depending on Elon Musk at the moment. But if it still exists by the time you're listening to this, you can follow me at Evan_257. And you can read my blog pieces about Doctor Who and mathematics on my blog site, which is www.thebloggeronTheInside.wordpress.com. And if you'd like to read something I've written recently, I also regularly write pieces for the Oxford Doctor Who Society fanzine called The Tides of Time. And I wrote a piece about all of the sort of mathematical undercurrents of Series 8 of Doctor Who and why I think Peter Capaldi's Doctor has a lot of mathematical qualities. So yeah, if you find my Twitter, you should see that pinned up at the top there. So yeah. That's me.
Brilliant.
Well, brilliant. We look forward to seeing your mathematical dissection of the remaining 20 episodes of K9. You can follow me, as ever, at ScribbleScript on Twitter, as long as it exists. And Tom?
So yes, you can follow the K9 BingeQuake Twitter account, which is at K9 BingeQuake. And yes, you can email us k9bingequake@gmail.com if you have comments, feedback, whatever. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah. And as ever, you know, leave a review. That always helps podcasts. And thank you for listening. And good night, bastards. You have been listening to K9 BingeQuake with your hosts, Tom Marshall, Kevin Bernard, and special guest, Evan Jones. This episode, Kicking Surveillance Posterior, was recorded 20th November 2022 and was edited by Kevin Bernard. Theme music was composed by Jack Gudiera. Thank you for listening, and also,